Today's July 17th, 2025. Current Bitcoin price is $120,492.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
I think we called that we were going to break 120,000 on Sunday last week.
Yep. And then we did on Monday.
Oh, well, we did it on Sunday.
Was it a Sunday, later Sunday?
It was later
Sunday. And then Monday, it kind of faltered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a pullback on Monday. We went down to, I think we went down as low as 115. Wow. After hitting the high of 123,000, where were we at? We were at 123,404, it looks like. And then we went down as low as 115,704. And now we're back at 120. So, yeah, pretty crazy. I don't know. It felt like that time was about right. We need to start moving the prices forward. We're getting to the end of summer. If cycles are going to end, you know, we're kind of getting to where that time should kind of start to happen. Plus, we saw the big, beautiful bill get passed, big voter bill. Whatever you want to call it. So how are our theoreticals doing? Because I was curious about this, man. Like have we doubled that halving purchase yet?
Well, let's get there in a second. Start with purchase one back in October 2023. $3,000 would have bought you 0.0885 Bitcoin. And that $3,000 investment is now worth $10,664. So doing great.
That's awesome.
I mean, this is the highest theoretical that we've had so far. So buy number two, $1,000 purchased at the halving, which was April 19th, 2024. If you would have put $1,000 in, you could have got 0.01564 Bitcoin. And that $1,000 purchase is now worth $1,884.
Wow. Not quite there yet, man. I was hoping. I was like, man, we got to be there. We got to be there, but we got to, so you were saying we got to hit like 126, right? 128.
Cause I remember it being right at 64,000, like maybe just a hair below.
Right at that.
Right at the halving.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Price action has been kind of crazy. When we look at the charts, we're looking at the, far side flows. We had on the 11th, almost $1 billion just from iBit purchased that day. iBit alone. I mean, and there were obviously it was $1 billion total that day, but.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the lion's share right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. July 14th, 394 million. July 15th, 416 million. And then the 16th, 763 million. We still don't have numbers for today yet, but I mean, nobody can touch BlackRock in this field. Like, I mean, they've got so much. I mean, your next place is Fidelity, and they've got $12 billion. BlackRock is at $55 billion assets under management in this thing. Yeah. It is nuts.
Actually, closer to $56 billion.
Yeah. I always tend to run down. I'm like, I'm always like, yeah, no, it's a. Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy week. We had almost talked about recording yesterday, but I wanted to kind of hold off because of the stuff that was going to go through or the stuff that was going on with crypto week this week. But we did get CPI numbers and it came in a little bit hotter than expected, right?
Yep. 2.7 versus the expectations of 2.6%.
Yeah. And it's kind of a drastically different number from what we saw in Trueflation. Was that last week that we were looking at Trueflation?
Yes, the last episode, we were looking at Trueflation. And according to their scale, they were going down. I mean, it was hitting below one, wasn't it?
Well, it was below two for sure, but it was like 1.3.
Below two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this one, I mean, obviously, like CPI number, they're always looking at the previous month, whereas Trueflation, I think that if that holds true going into August, then July's inflation number, if it stays the what Trueflation was looking at, then we are going to see sub 2 on the inflation rate, which I don't know.
Which is, well, here's the deal. That's always CPI inflation. That's not true inflation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's still pretty good because we've not been anywhere near that since 2021.
No, we have not. What is it? So I'm pulling up Trueflation right now. So right now on Trueflation, it's showing us right at 2% on the money. So it's climbed a little bit because when we had recorded last, it wasn't in that, you know, the below the 2. So now it's right at 2%. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. And there was, I guess, basically that was kind of causing Trump. He's been frustrated with Powell this whole time, right?
He wants his head on a pike.
He sat there and said that he's got the easiest job out there.
Yep.
Which, I don't know. I have no idea how hard it is to be the chairman of the Fed. I can't imagine it's that hard.
Well, I tell you what, when Bitcoin takes over, there's going to be no chairman of the Bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really unnecessary job. But part of me, I mean, it kind of feels like Trump forgot that he was the one that appointed Powell back in, what, 16, 17, or, yeah, 2017?
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, Trump is, I voted for Trump, but, like, the stuff that he's been doing lately, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, what are you pulling here?
Well, it's all about, with Trump, it's all about his ego. If you're scratching his back, he loves you. You say, speak out against him or do it something that he doesn't want, you're public enemy number one. He comes up with a nickname for you and threatens your job.
Yeah.
So it's about par for the course.
That's true. Absolutely true. We won't go into the other stuff with that right now. I mean, that's not neither here nor there with the stuff with Bitcoin or anything like that. But as we were kind of talking about before at the beginning of the episode, we were talking about it being crypto week in DC. There were supposed to be three kind of big things that were supposed to go through. There was the Clarity Act, the Genius Act, and the Anti-CBDC Surveillance State Act. There was initially, like, whenever we saw the price kind of falter with Bitcoin, was part of that was there was hold up within basically the House trying to move these through. The Genius Act, on one hand, has already come from the Senate, so now it was just needed to go through the House, and once the House approved it, it was going to go to President Trump's desk. The other two, the Clarity Act and the Anti-CBDC, now they're gone through the House, they're going to go over to the Senate, and I'm sure they're going to get amended and changed from there. But it was those three kind of things got kind of faltered right away. There was a lot of discussion about basically the CBDC. They didn't like it. Then they were trying to bundle the bills together, and then they weren't going to bundle it. There was a bunch of different things they were doing with it. So it was causing a lot of uncertainty with what was going to happen with those. And I think it was on Monday night or Tuesday night, Trump had posted on Truth Social about how he had House Republicans in to discuss getting these things across the goal line and how they had enough votes. And the next day they didn't have enough votes. Did you keep up with any of that?
No, I've not been paying attention to that.
It was so confusing. I kept on, like, trying to monitor it, and it was like, oh, well, they voted something. And then it was like, no, it didn't get voted in. And then, oh, well, they voted for this, didn't vote for this. And then basically they voted to be able to discuss it. And it was a big rigmarole. Finally, today, we finally got clarity. So we got the Clarity Act that got basically passed through the House. We got the Anti-CBDC Surveillance Act that got passed through the House. And the Genius Act, which is going to be going to President Trump's desk tomorrow to be signed. So, I mean, it's been a pretty big win in the crypto space from a regulatory standpoint for the U.S. government.
And just for a reminder on what the Genius Act is.
Yeah, so the Genius Act, basically what that is it's basically going to regulate stablecoins. So it introduces a robust framework for dollar-backed stablecoins. For those of you that don't know what that is, there's coins that were released. The most famous one was Tether, I would say. where it's a coin that is earmarked one for one to the US dollar, and basically was meant as a safe haven. Like if you had Bitcoin, Bitcoin's up $123,000. Well, you wanted to cash out your Bitcoin, but you didn't want to actually turn it into dollars. You could transfer that money into a stable coin, and it wouldn't necessarily gain value, but it would hold peg the value to the dollar at that point. Does that make sense? Is that a good explanation of stable coins?
I think so.
So it's still a digital currency, but it's not exposed to the fluctuations. Like you don't buy a stable coin for it to appreciate in the way that Bitcoin does. It doesn't have that scarcity part of it.
It's supposed to be one to one.
Right.
$10.
Yeah. It's stable and it's pegged basically to the dollar. So there were some issues in the past where, and I think we talked about it on a couple of episodes, and these are old episodes. I think you got to go back, I think, to whenever, right after we were getting to the peak of the last cycle and we started to come back down. There were times that stablecoins got depegged from the dollar and they would go below it. You know, it may be only for a second, but that's still like, that's not supposed to happen. So it bans algorithmic models, which were very popular by some of the not so legit stablecoins, mandates transparency. So basically they want to see a full one-to-one on the reserves. And when we say one-to-one, it's not necessarily that they have to have dollars, but they got to have government bonds. They got to have different types of treasuries, anything that equate to the amount of dollars that they say they have for the stablecoin. Includes dual Fed and state licensing plus consumer protection. So basically if the stablecoin issuer, because this isn't going to be issued by the Fed, the stablecoin issuer, like if they fail, their stakeholders are the ones that actually get paid out first. So it's supposed to help with the bankruptcy if that happens. Basically we're looking at kind of the death of the Wild West within the crypto space, unlike what we had before, where people could kind of do whatever. Because we had initial coin offerings, ICOs instead of IPOs. Like there's a bunch of stuff that this is going to bring a lot more clarity to, the crypto space in general in the United States. And I think that's really kind of revolutionary because I think this is the first country that has done anything like this in the world.
Yep.
So I was pretty excited.
It's kind of interesting.
Go ahead.
Donald Trump did a rug pull ICO type thing, Hawktua girl. And now with this, those are no more.
Yeah. Well, and I'm still kind of curious because I think there's something within the framework of the wording. Members of Congress and stuff like that are not allowed to participate in any of those types of companies except for the president for some reason, which I still don't know how they were able to get some of that stuff through, like wording like that.
Well, I understand how that happened exactly.
I'm like, how did they approve that? Anyways, I don't know. Maybe that's not part of the Genius Act about the president being the only one that's exempt. But the Clarity Act, on the other hand, is supposed to bring basically clarity on what is being controlled by the CFTC, so the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, and what's going to be controlled by the SEC. Because I think the SEC, we saw that a lot where I can't even think of his name now. He's no longer the head of the SEC. What was his name?
Gensler.
Yes. Gary Gensler, where there was a lot of that stuff where he may have been overreaching on his bounds. So the Clarity Act, basically they were looking at what was going to be deemed between securities and, you know, what was going to be the commodities. And the list that they actually kind of recognized was actually kind of short. But I thought it was very interesting to look at this. So they only have, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 currently listed on there. And the 8 that they have listed are Bitcoin, Ethereum, Binance Chain, XRP, Ledger, Cardano, Solana, Dogecoin, and Tron. So only 3 of those are what they would consider mature under the Clarity Act. Basically, Bitcoin, it says likely mature, fully decentralized, proof of work, fair distribution, no central control. Ethereum, likely mature, decentralized proof of stake with broad development and public token distribution. Cardano, likely mature, public proof of stake with diverse validators and no single holder over 20%. Those are the only three that are considered mature within the Clarity Act.
What do you think about Cardano being there?
You know, I liked a lot of what Charles Hoskinson was attempting to do with Cardano. However, I don't know. Like, it feels like so much of what he has promised with the token itself, and I guess the tokenomics of it all, like, I guess that doesn't really matter for this kind of thing. I still wonder how that got considered mature. And you even mentioned this, like, XRP wasn't considered mature.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that XRP is mature, but they were meeting with all the people, especially after they won their case with the SEC. I thought they were basically a shoe-in to become part of the quote-unquote strategic reserve or the national reserve, you know.
Yeah.
Which I was not a fan of. And the fact that they missed that boat, I'm not complaining. It just, it did surprise me a little.
Yeah, I don't know if Charles Hoskinson was a little bit more... I don't know. I can't imagine. Maybe he greased the palms better. I don't know. Maybe he had the briefcase like appropriately placed better than Garlinghouse or whatever his name is from Ripple.
So maybe, I mean, it's a lot easier nowadays. You don't need a briefcase. You just need a crypto wallet. There you go.
Yeah. You can just transfer the money right there. And then, yeah. So, and obviously, like, the other thing that kind of went through with that was the anti-CBDC surveillance state act, which that one got held up because they wanted to make sure there was a little bit more stronger wording initially in there, just to make sure that CBDCs really were kind of banned within that framework. So we'll see. I mean, I think for the most part, that's all been positive news when it comes to regulations and legislature from the U.S. government right now with some of that. What's your take on it? How do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's generally good. You know, with the Genius Act, though, I think it could be a potential. I mean, we've said it before. It's just a potential backdoor for CBDCs.
Yep.
With a stablecoin. So, I mean, so I'm a little bit mixed on that. But things are going good. Bitcoin's pretty close to an all-time high. I can't really complain.
You know, and the other thing I wonder about with the CBDCs, or not the CBDCs, but the Stablecoin Act, with Genius Act, is that going to be another way for money printers to go burr?
Maybe.
Are they going to just basically increase their inflation? And I mean, if they increase through, you know, stablecoins, does that affect the same way?
Well, it's a different place for the dollars that they print or the treasuries that they print to go.
Yeah.
And so like, I think it does give the federal government a little bit more, a few different places to store the toxic sludge known as U.S. government debt.
Yeah. I mean, and if we think about that as toxic sludge, right, does that basically give them a little bit more of a, or a larger pond to where they can spread that out a little bit more, give you a little bit more breathing room? Like if we're inside of a closed system, right? You're inside of a tank and that, you know, we're approaching the top of the lid pretty soon. Does that give us a little bit of a pressure relief where it goes out into a larger pond? Give us more time?
I think so. Buys them a little bit more time.
Physics of money. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering about that. I didn't think about it quite that way before. Anyways, the other thing that kind of came through was, this is just something I wanted to touch on. There was a Freedom of Information Act request sent to the U.S. Marshals requesting them to disclose how much Bitcoin they had. And they had approximately, it was like 30,000 or 29,000 Bitcoin is what they stated they had. And everybody went into panic mode thinking that, you know, that they sold off 170,000 Bitcoin, which would have been the stockpile basically that the U.S. government had. And, I wanted to just get on record on this episode here and just talk about how that's not true. That's just what the federal marshals had, or the U.S. marshals. Yeah. That has nothing to do with the other 170,000 that is still sitting there. And Arkham Intelligence actually kind of backed that up. One of the beautiful things, again, about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin specifically is that we can see that movement on the blockchain.
Yeah, we can track wallets.
Yeah. So they said, no, that's not true. That's just misinformation at this point. One of the other cool things go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the federal government is a multi-headed hydra. I mean, the hydra doesn't even explain it enough. It has way more heads than that.
Yeah.
So there could be however many different places that they have Bitcoin located. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even think they know.
No.
And it was kind of funny because I think Cynthia Loomis talked about it and she's like, oh, no, that's a horrible blunder if that's true. She doesn't even exactly know. You know, you would think like if anybody within the government would be like, no, that's absolutely not true. She just said, oh, that would be a horrible blunder if it's true. She didn't outright say it wasn't true. Like I'm kind of curious like how much they actually have. Because I mean, if Arkham Intelligence is still saying they have 198,000. Does that include the 30,000 that's actually within the U.S. Marshals? Or do they have like 230,000?
I don't know. That'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, they need to figure that out pretty quick. The other thing that I thought was really kind of cool news is it looks like Trump is going to be removing capital gains taxes from Bitcoin transactions under a certain value.
It just remains to see what that value is, right?
Correct. Yeah, we don't know exactly what that's going to be. It could be $1,000, could be $600. Not sure yet. But that would actually be quite the game changer at that point, because then you can actually start to use it as a currency.
Yep. Let's say transactions might happen a lot more, and it almost pay to transact in it more.
Yeah,
as long as you don't cross that threshold.
I mean, I know like Stake and Shake, like there was a big outpouring of support for Stake and Shake taking Bitcoin and stuff like that. But I mean, every time somebody was doing that, you know, that's a capital gains transaction. Even if it is, I mean, it's small, right? But I mean, you're spending $20 for a burger and a shake or whatever, but that's still like a much higher tax rate than what, because I mean, you're going to pay your sales tax plus your capital gains tax if you go and buy from Stake and Shake. So that would be good to see.
Tracking that was a nightmare, right? Oh,
God. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if that would show up on a radar somewhere. I mean, because that is such a minute transaction. Like, I think it would cost more money just to do the paperwork on it than to actually get the tax back from it, the capital gains tax from it. And then, did you hear about Jack Dorsey's messaging service that he created?
Yes. I heard briefly about it, but go ahead and explain it.
Well, so what it sounds like is that it's a messaging app, and I can't remember the name of it. It's Bit something. I just wanted to bring it up because I was curious what your thoughts were. But it allowed you to transact with somebody else directly without internet. You have to be within Bluetooth range. But it also comes embedded with a Bitcoin hardware wallet or a Bitcoin wallet embedded within the messaging service. So you can transfer Bitcoin wirelessly without the need for an internet connection.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
It's like old school tech in a new way.
Yep. Well, it's just, it's kind of cool to see Jack Dorsey, you know, former founder of Twitter, former CEO, doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
I like him a lot better as the former Twitter CEO.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I still think, and I think we even talked about this because it's crazy to think about, but we've been doing this podcast for a while. And when we think about that, like he was the CEO of Twitter whenever we started this.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like he kind of was being held by the board and there was a lot of decisions that he made that he didn't like. I think even when he banned Trump initially from Twitter, I think he felt some kind of way about that. And I think he put it on there, you know, a few times, but he felt pressured by his board to do so. But the weird thing is he's always kind of in that liberal space because anything he touches turns into like liberal nirvana. Blue Sky, I think was the other one. Was that his, right?
Well, he started Blue Sky, but that's been kind of just its own thing.
Yeah, he left that one. He's gone behind from that. But then, you know, he's got his own hardware wallet out now. I've thought about checking one of those out, but I haven't purchased one yet. I don't know. He's very much kind of the behind the scenes pro Bitcoin guy.
Yep. No, he does things that are interesting, not necessarily what you'd expect.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And one that always blew my mind is when he tweeted out Murray Rothbard's Anatomy of the State.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he tweeted that out, I was like, holy crap. So, I mean, he's full of surprises. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what else the prices are going to do. It's kind of exciting. I'm actually surprised the price hasn't moved up more based on the news that we got today. But we'll see where everything else kind of goes. What do you think will happen?
I'm afraid to say because whatever I say, it does the exact opposite. But I feel like we're about to jump aboard the crazy train.
Yeah, I feel that same way. I feel that same way. Maybe next week when we record again, we'll be at another level of all-time high. Maybe that halving purchase will actually double finally. So,
There can be hope.
you know what? I want to pose a question to you. So, a certain family member has come into some money recently, and I'm trying to convince somebody that kind of helps oversee their money to purchase some Bitcoin. Not saying a lot, but toss in some money, a little chunk of change. And I'm trying to figure out the best way to approach that to get them to understand Bitcoin. Number one, do you think now's the time to buy or should they wait? And number two, what's the best way you would pitch that? I was thinking about using housing prices, like comparing my house and their house 5 years ago to now in Bitcoin value. Because I feel like
I
people
mean,
understand assets when they look at houses, like they understand that.
yeah, I would relate it to that. I mean, it's Bitcoin has outperformed basically almost everything, over the past few years. I mean, I even think it, Nvidia was ahead of it for a bit. Have they basically surpassed that now?
No, Bitcoin is now, like when we look at it, you're talking about like its
Like
capital
the,
or
not its cap, well, not its capital, but its performance over the past couple of years.
oh, that I'm not sure on.
Well, I'm just saying it's done better than pretty much everything. The only
Yeah.
thing that was ahead of it at one point was Nvidia. And I think if you're going to break it down into the simplest term, one house makes the most amount of sense
Yeah.
versus one Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think because I was looking at it the other day and it was something, I can't remember what the exact number was, but it used to be like even for my house 5 years ago was quite a few Bitcoin. And now even with the appreciation that's taken place, like it's in single digits of Bitcoin that it would take to purchase my house where it didn't 5 years ago. It took multiples 5 years ago. And now it's like, well, a few of these here would do it. So that's where I'm like, I think that may be the best way to explain it because everybody understands houses. And when you look at it, like you're like, okay, well, your house has gone up in dollars, but Bitcoin has gone down. Why do you think that is?
Well,
Why?
the other question on whether now is a good time to buy, I think we're running out of that window.
Yeah.
So I don't really have a good answer on that
I
one.
think if I
Depends on.
do talk him into it, I think I've got to preface that with our 4 year. You've got to at least hold for 4 years.
Yep.
I mean, if you absolutely have to sell or whatever, you can, but it's recommended you hold it for at least 4 years.
Yep. 4 to 5 years, and you're gonna look pretty.
So, yeah, anyways, that's all I've got. Anything else you want to bring up?
That's it for me.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you all. Hopefully, I know this is a little bit of a longer episode, but I figured there was a lot to kind of cover today. So I hope you enjoyed kind of going into some of that content and hopefully maybe we cleared some stuff up for you or made you more questions. I don't know. But
Maybe muddied the waters, who knows?
we will talk to you all soon.
Ah.